Dude, I'm getting really cultured here, man. Like, my dad's from Thomasville, bro. Like, I had a Fulton County education, dog. Like, you know what I'm
saying? Break out the roomie on you.
I'm really learning some stuff here tonight.
He's over here Googling roomie.
Yeah, Yuri Belov, rest in peace. Yuri Belov gets a smell off. That's my thing used to say.
Funny arrest stories, and I'm not going to tell Kale's story, but he has a very funny arrest story. And what's even funnier is, you know, my son, he's 16, he's got the screenshot of his news story on his phone.
Oh.
We're sitting at dinner, and he goes, "Hey, Dad, have you seen this?"
Oh, no.
I have this poem I put in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's appropriate. Have you ever read this poem? You ever heard of it? The Rumi poem?
That's right. Rumi?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
so this perfect. Is a Rumi poem. So we're sitting here today. We have a couple comedians with us, which is awesome. And we're going to be talking about a lot of different stuff. But I want to start with this poem. And this is by Rumi. And the title is "Someone Should Start Laughing." I have 1,000 brilliant lies for the question, "How are you?" I have 1,000 brilliant lies for the question, "What is God?" If you think that the truth can be known from words, if you think that the sun and the ocean can pass through that tiny opening called the mouth, oh, someone should start laughing. Someone should start wildly laughing now.
I think I finally got it. Like, that's the fourth time I've heard it. I was like, oh man, where's he going with this? Like,
yeah.
I didn't know if it was like some deep Bible cut or
right.
What, man? That's fresh.
Dude, I'm getting really cultured here, man. Like, my dad's from Thomasville, bro. Like, I had a Fulton County education, dog. Like, you know what I'm
break
saying?
Break out the roomie on you.
I'm really learning some stuff here tonight.
He's over here Googling roomie.
It's I don't even know.
Two O's.
I don't know.
I thought roomie was like that dude that lived in your house in college.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Oh, man.
So our guest today is Richie Satori. Richie is a person in long-term recovery, comedian, and the only guest to correct the grammar on my show notes. He is spearheading the Stand Up for Recovery Comedy Fest. Stand Up for Recovery aims to showcase the nation's best comedians in recovery for audiences in recovery and allies too. We take recovery seriously while trying not to take ourselves too seriously. Humor and laughter are healing, and recovery is so much better when it's fun. And Richie brought John C. He's a fellow comedian and person in recovery. So welcome to the Most High Show, guys.
Thank you. Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
I think in the pre-interview, Richie, I was telling you how I've worked with comedians for like a long time, 20 years, and worked with Steve Harvey for 11 years, and we used to do all the booking for BET Comic View.
Dang.
So we would travel all around the country at all these just hole-in-the-wall comedy spots. Wow. And we'd just bring up, and this is back in the day, we had a VHS camcorder, and we would record these shows, and then we'd take the tape back, and Steve would watch the show and kind of pick the comedian.
Amazing.
To move on to Comic View, which, for those of you who might not know, BET used to have this show on called Comic View, where a lot of black comics, like, it was like the main place where they could get national recognition. And so I got to see a lot of different comedy and comedians, and one of my clients is now a longtime friend. He's a comedian as well, and so I love comedians. And I know David does too, and so it's really cool to have a couple legit dudes here with us today. So
for sure, yeah, thanks for having
to y'all, man.
And that you're using it as a form to kind of get this recovery message out there.
What a great angle!
Yeah,
right. Yeah. On, man. Because like this, you know, it's like kind of like, you know, it's sort of inspired. Well, definitely inspired by like Rule 62: don't take yourself so damn seriously. But it kind of almost the motto or philosophy of, you know, take your recovery seriously, just don't take yourself too serious. Mm-hmm. Kind of came from, you know, it's not like I got an overabundance of feedback, people saying like, how can you laugh about something so serious? But it's just when you do hear certain things, it kind of like, well, if one person's thinking it, maybe other people are. And it's an important question to address. And I mean, yeah, it is. We had heavy stuff, but you need even more so. You need that outlet to laugh,
right?
And it's not making light of it. It's it's, you know, it's a form of resilience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We did a series of podcasts at this at the Rock Hope Dealers, and we had a couple guests on. And so as we're doing the thing, you know, we're laughing and because we're talking about history. And one of the, I think it was like a mother from this kid's past was like, how could you laugh about this? Like what he did to my daughter. And so that was like the first time I saw that, what you said, right? Which is like, how could you laugh about this? But to me, it's like, that's the only way we can deal with this heavy stuff that we've done, right? Like one of the only ways to do that is to kind of look at it and not take ourselves so seriously, to be able to move on past it. So that was a trip. You know, and we had to
confrontation right there to get stood up by a mom. Can you laugh? My son did this to my kid, that type of thing.
Yeah, that was hardcore. A tough one. Yeah, come back from.
I didn't even know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I found is like, is do people in recovery have some of the best senses of humor, man?
Oh, yeah.
And like, and I started doing comedy before I got sober, and like, it's the two groups of people, comedians and people in recovery, where you just have like an instant connection. Whatever it is, you're on the same like plane where you're just like, oh, I know you, even though I don't know you.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I remember when we were doing Not a Glum Block Comedy, we were coming up with t-shirt ideas. And, you know, we had several different fellowships at our clubhouse, and one of them was HA. And he says, well, we did a long sleeve t-shirt. And we said, of course we did a long sleeve t-shirt. And everybody laughed. It was hilarious.
July, we did a long sleeve t-shirt.
When you tell like somebody outside of recovery, they're like, they don't get it. Or they're like, how could you laugh about that? But like, we all thought it was funny. Heroin addicts and all.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, exactly. So let's
jump
in. If
we can laugh about it, we can talk about it.
Amen.
If you can mock it, you can manage it.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
It's because for me, I was on probation when I, my first 2 years, like after I got arrested, and I'm going to meetings and I'm hearing these things, you know, that are kind of like depressing truths, for lack of a better set of words to put together. And this kind of like, because like I said, I've been involved in the comedy arena since I was a kid. And so I've read biographies of like comedians and studied it as an art form, like, et cetera. So there was just something clicked at the meeting. It was like, you know, I had my notebook and I was trying to write down stuff. And then I realized I had to do stand up.
Wow.
Cause I was afraid to share at meetings. I thought everything that, you know, said could be used against me. I hadn't had my court date yet. I thought I didn't trust nobody. And I'm like, well, you know, I can get up on stage once a week because I went to school for acting. I was able to petition the judge to say it was work related, to say it was a writing class. And then if it did come up in court, I could be like, I was just kidding. but still, I think it's true. Like, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets. Pain shared is pain lessened, you know, like, great quote by MLK. I can't remember, but you know, kind of out of the darkness type of thing. Like, I think that was like, hate can't drive out hate, only love can. But
right,
it was another quote maybe. But yeah, like it was just very therapeutic because I had that ability to share on stage, even though I couldn't share at the meetings. But unfortunately, I think, you know, it wasn't quite enough. Like I would hear people share parts of my story at meetings, and I get some reprieve from that, and I got some reprieve on stage. But I had some, you know, relapses since symptoms, some setbacks and stuff early on. But that's, you know, recovery's not necessarily linear. You know, it's supplemental to my recovery, and there's multiple pathways to recovery. So I found it to be a helpful tool. It's kind of like journaling, you know. And you know, you're dealing with all these emotions bottled up. And I was working at a recovery community organization called Rise Theater, which I still do part-time. And, you know, they use art as an outlet to process emotions, which we've been numbing ourselves to, good or bad. And so they have, you know, dance and painting and poetry and stuff like that. And I was bringing some improv and storytelling and humor into the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it as nothing but a creative, artistic form of expression when it's difficult just to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you do it in a comedy form. It's no different than somebody painting or singing or doing poetry. It's a way, it was an outlet for you. Maybe not enough, right? Like you said, you had to do some more stuff, but definitely a place where you can go and let that piece out of you that you were like wanting to get rid of while you're at the meeting, but you couldn't because of trust issues and things like that. Yeah. So it's good, man.
And the power of, you know, like just like when you watch a play or you listen to music or hear someone share or you speak, or see a painting, you know, like it connects with you on that emotional level and there's that connection, you know, and it just feels good. It lets you feel seen and lets you know you're not alone. And there is, I think it's therapeutic both ways. I feel like can be for the audience as well as the performers. That's symbiosis that, you know, we get it.
Yeah.
Meetings and talk, you know, just in everything, you know, it's that connection piece.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the more popular comedians that I was Theo Von. I started seeing his stuff, and then he was sneaking in recovery stuff into it.
Rat King.
And he was the first one. Me and David actually went to, where did we go, Charleston and seen him?
Yeah, South Carolina. Wow.
Yeah. But what was funny is I seen him at the Comedy Store in L.A.
Oh,
just happened to be, I was in L.A. and he was performing comedy, him, David Spade, and a couple other people. And so he does his bit, and he's got these laughs that seem like they're real genuine, like he's laughing with you. And then those timings was the same thing in Charleston. And I was like, oh, crap. This is a freaking act.
It's part
of his bit.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting to see.
No, it's totally off the top.
It was natural, organic.
Yeah, that riff is all the same thing I hear every night.
Right. Yeah, that was a trip.
That's dope, though, man.
Yeah. But he's the first one that I saw that was kind of like coming at it from that angle. But then also, we talk about it in a vulnerable way through his podcast and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of like, I think I see more people like John Mulaney just came out with a special where it talks about his whole, you know, going to rehab and all that kind of stuff. And he made like probably one of the most tragic parts of his life into a stand up that when I watched it, I could relate to it. I enjoyed it. I had fun. I understood where he was coming from. And so it meant a lot to me to see that. And for him to tell the story in that way, I guess it gives it a different kind of framing than, you know, the sad, like.
Right. I think it allows you to kind of own the experience.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I got arrested, it was in a small town. And, like, you know, you realize in those moments, like, how you're not just hurting yourself and, like, you know, how it affects family and stuff like that. And so, like, you know, it's in the papers and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, you know, people are going to talk about it. People are going to laugh about it. Like, why don't I beat him to the punch? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a story about Viktor Frankl, he was a survivor of the Holocaust. And I think the movie Life is Beautiful is based on his story with Roberto Benigni. Great movie. But so he's in the Holocaust based on a true story. But in his real life experience, he heard that they were going to start starving people to death at the concentration camp. So he made the decision to start fasting. And people died of starvation. But by the time, like 2 months later, the camp was being liberated. Not only was he still alive, he had the strength to like carry people out. So, you know, I think by, you know, it's just the power of the mind. It's like the first step, you know, admitting, yeah, something that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Like we were just,
okay, I'll admit it.
Yeah. So by like,
no one knew I was on cocaine.
I'm gonna let you guys know something. I'm admitting something right now.
I didn't do well when an authority figure says don't do drugs, but when I made that decision myself, for me, my story, you know, like when I flushed this last bit down and it was my choice, that was very empowering. Of course, I can't deny a fact of a higher power has played in my recovery, you know, and the strength I get from that. And we are in the Most High show. So like, and I know you.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. Shout out to my HP.
Holla at your boy.
Gang. Shout out to Theo Vaughn.
Well, I'm just thinking of funny arrest stories, and I'm not going to tell Kale's story, but he has a very funny.
Which one?
Arrest story. And what's even funnier is, you know, my son, he's 16, and so him and Kale are buddies, and he's got the screenshot of his news story on his phone.
Oh.
We're sitting at dinner and he goes, "Hey, Dad, have you seen this?"
Oh, no.
I said, "Let's wait till he gets his next chip before we show him that."
I'd still love to see my mugshot, man.
Oh, yeah.
That 10-year challenge.
Yeah. All right. So we kind of jumped on this a little bit about what about laughter feels so good, because we're kind of talking about that a little bit. And I've heard that laughter is like an involuntary reaction, mm-hmm. right? Like you don't.
It's like choking.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding. Bad analogy. it's like crying. It is like crying. It's like they are so close. It's an emotional release, mm-hmm. and they're both very therapeutic.
Yeah.
And they also, there's so much like actual evidence-based studies on like the therapeutic value. It's like the best massage of your vital organs right. you can have. It does release like healthy chemicals in your brain, you know, mm-hmm. that are, you know, the come down's a lot better than dope, you know?
Yeah, right.
yeah. But yeah, I think that there is, it's, it you're taking like, help me here. You're taking like breaths of like oxygen when you're laughing. And there's a guy who did a bunch of studies in the 70s and on the healing power of laughter, but it's amazing.
Yeah. I know it's involuntary because I think, Kale, you went down with me to the Laughing Skull, right? And this one comedian came out there and he was joking. It was like, you can't joke about that. But also, it's so funny. And so we're like trying not to laugh because it's like, this is not okay to laugh at this. You know?
Those are the funniest
things. Yeah, they're the but best it was, things to laugh at.
I mean, me and him were looking at each other just cracking up.
Was like, he in on the joke? Was it like, was it his intention to get laughs when you were laughing? Or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. But he knew. He was like, he was on that edge, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, yo, you can't. Like, this is not a thing you joke about.
If you're not pissing a few people off, I mean, like my brand of comedy, people don't usually get mad at. I just kind of tell stories about my silly life. But a lot of like the great comedians out there, if you're not making somebody mad, if you're not making somebody walk out, you're not really pushing it far enough. Mm. And I've had a few of those bits where people are like, "What are you talking about?" But yeah, I mean, this laughter is like the best thing. Like, I mean, it's such a nostalgic thing for me. Like with my brothers and sisters, like I'm one of five, and it's every time we get together, it's busting each other's balls. It's joking. It's laughing. We're like, we're that family in a restaurant where you're like, "Wow, will they please shut up?"
Yeah.
Like we're that family, but it's like, it's jovial. And it's like, those are like some of the best memories I have is just, or like with my buddies of like laughing about silly stuff that doesn't make sense to anybody outside of that group.
Mm.
But it's something that like we can text each other one word and then I'm laughing out loud and I try to explain it to somebody else and it just doesn't make sense.
You got to be there.
But it's great.
But that's like me and David laugh a lot when we hang out. And it's like, that's my favorite people to hang out with is people who make me laugh, you know? Yeah. And like, I think for a long time when I got sober, you know, it was hard to get to laugh again, right? Mm-hmm. Or to cry, like, you know? So then I think I had a conversation with an old friend and I'm just busting up. And we're on the phone, you know, and I got that sides hurting, you know, and your mouth, your face is hurting because you're smiling and laughing so hard. And I remember that being the first time that I really actually like had that release of an emotion in recovery.
Yeah.
I was afraid I was going to lose that when I got sober.
Mm.
Honestly, like I was like, oh, I'm going to be this buttoned up Ned Flanders type dude wearing a sweater vest. Mm. My life's going to be so
lame.
Boring. Yeah. Like I'm not going to have any fun. And I've had just as much, if not more, belly laughs in recovery with people in recovery, being sober and just being silly. Like I say, having a silly goose time. Yeah. We're out here having a silly goose time. Silly goose conventions in town. I'm the keynote speaker. You know, like just being goofy and yeah. I mean, it's just such a great time. And like I was so afraid I was gonna lose myself, who I was. Yeah. And then I realized, like, no, who I am is going to shine brighter because I'm sober. Like, I've been dulling my light with drugs and alcohol, right?
Right. Yeah.
And now I can actually, one, remember my jokes, and two, just, like, be present in the moment.
Yeah. You become I like to say we become who we are, right? Like who we really are. It finally gets revealed. Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing to witness.
I remember
excuses for who you are too.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Can't blame it on the dope no more. You know, I'm just an asshole. That's
who I am.
I remember. It was my first meeting. I couldn't drive. I'd ask my mom for a ride. It was pretty. It felt humiliating, and you know, someone sensed the dis-ease, you know, and came up and tried to lighten the mood afterwards, and they were like, before I got in recovery, man, I was a flaming asshole. But now I got a sponsor, I work the steps, and I go to meetings. Hell, now I'm just an asshole. And I remember it felt so good to be able to laugh.
Like, just to diffuse, you know, the whole tension, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It was exactly what I needed. And that's part of, you know, what inspired Stand Up for Recovery Comedy Fest was giving back the gift of laughter that recovery first gave to me. Or, you know, return to me, you know, because, you know, you can feel very much alone and like you against the world in early recovery, you know, and, you know, possibly later too, you know, like we can't forget the long timers and in betweeners. Yeah. But, you know, as they say, like the newcomers are the most important. But just, yeah, to be able, because I've talked to people about, you know, why maybe they went back out or had a relapse. And it was like, when I heard people, you know, say that they were bored, that really just kind of like was jarring. And it doubled my passion to try to create sober friendly events to do. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of great stuff going on, like National Recovery Month, family friendly, but a lot of times, you know, it's good to just go out as adults and have a good laugh.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that why what we do is I felt like that, like there are so many of us in recovery who have that creative spark in us. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's not really fostered and invested in once you get sober. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like if you're creative and then you get sober and you don't have the creative outlet and you don't keep kind of like trying to be creative, then yeah, getting high becomes a really good option, you know, because to me that creative process is so such a divine thing that happens.
Yeah.
And so I like that that's like what you're doing is like to help foster this creativity, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it's important that creative people get sober and pursue their creative endeavors.
Yeah. If you're creative, if that's your sparks joy in you, if that's a gift that you've got, you know, we all have our gifts. But absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really undervalued. And you know, you see that in like the corporate workspace and stuff too. People think, you know, you got to like be like, you know, rule with an iron fist. And, but yeah, something you said made me think of something I heard at a meeting back in the DMV area. And they were saying they heard that the same part of your brain that's occupied when you get high is also where you have spiritual experiences, and that really it's one or the other. Mm. So people use drugs to try to, you know, get to experience, like to get closer, you know, but that at the end of the day, they are mutually exclusive, which kind of makes sense. So like you're talking about, like if you have this creative passion and then, you know, you get clean, you feel like everything's going to be buttoned up and boring. You really need that,
that outlet.
Yeah. That outlet. And I think, you know, being like spiritually grounded definitely kind of helps in that pursuit, you know, in a lot of,
it took me 6 months cause I also make music. And
nice.
when I quit drugs, I was making a lot of music, and then it took me probably 3 to 6 months before I could create music again, because drugs were such a that kind of avenue towards that. It would shut, what I loved about drugs was it shut my mind off, so then I could just do and be, and so I could create. And so it took me so long, and you know, that's a long time, 3 to 6 months, to be able to finally go, I remember like woke up with a melody one day.
Nice.
I was like, oh, where did that come from, right? But I felt like I lost.
That would be a good movie.
Yeah.
Just this Groundhog Day of just like white noise. And then all of a sudden you hear this melody come back.
Man. Yeah. The other thing I think like what I hear commonly among people in recovery is this outsider feeling, right? Kind of feeling like you know something about the family and about the place we're at that no one else knows, right? We kind of like, we have this intuition about us, and it can make us feel a little isolated. And I think comedy is kind of like these, like a way of observing it, calling it out, and then laughing about it, right?
Can you say that again in a different way? I didn't quite understand.
Would you want me to say it in French? Or
I think it was like what I was talking about. It was like you're on that same wavelength. Like comics and addicts are like that in the same way. But yeah, I mean, you're definitely, I mean, I can speak from my own experience. Like I felt like I was the only one that's got this darkness. I'm the only one that's like this. There's nobody who feels the way that I feel. And then I got in the rooms and I was like, oh, I am not that special.
Right.
Like everybody, like whether, you know, how far down you are on the scale, right? Like there's different people. There's always somebody's got it better. Somebody's got it worse. However, like we're all the same in that way. And I mean, that's like really what sparked my recovery and like what put me on fire for it was, oh, I'm not alone anymore. I don't have to go through this battle alone. But yeah, I've always been like, I feel like I look at my life in the third person,
right?
You know, like I'm the main character of the movie, and that speaks to my ego, which I'm trying to work through with my program.
What's that director piece? I was like, man,
call it right out.
there's you know, a score under my life all the time. That's how I always felt, and I still feel like that sometimes. But then I realized, like, oh, it's not just about me. You know, I can be of service to people. Like, what has been given to me, I can give back to other people. That feeling of being alone, like I can recognize it in somebody else, and like people, because like I used to be the same way where it's like the magnet for chaos came to me, and now I try to use that same magnet for good. Because like, you know, a stranger at a wedding or whatever, they got the bag, they whatever reason, they look at me and they're like, that's the guy I'm gonna party with tonight.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to
find
them.
Yeah, at the end of the bar or whatever. You know, we find our people.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Like you just know.
Yeah.
And like that vibration or whatever. And so like I try to use that same, I'm like, oh, like this guy's, you know, going through the same thing as me. Or, you know, vice versa, like they might have something that I need or can use.
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever that guy's got, I don't know what it is, but I want it.
Yeah.
And then I can give it away to somebody else.
Yeah. I think maybe another way to say it is like, I, for a long time, had a hard time getting along with people who seemed to have their shit together. I have nothing in common with you, you know, because much of my life is about exposing my vulnerabilities. It's about exposing like where I'm right. So in those situations, I would feel less than, right? Because here I am trying to be all, being me, which is, you know, and then someone who has it together, I would think, okay, like I can't relate to you. But moving on in life, and as I've continued to develop, it's like now I know everyone's got some shit, right? Everyone's got something they're dealing with internally.
Yeah.
And so no one's really, it's the ones that fake like they got it all together.
Right.
That'll make me feel very quickly like an outcast.
But the ones that fake that are the ones that are suffering the most.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You pointed out something when we were talking on the phone the other day, like that, like really everybody's, you know, affected by addiction, whether if it's directly them or, you know, 2 degrees of separation. And as much as I wouldn't mind not stepping in another like comedy club bar and just performing for people in recovery and alternative venues, like there's still people that, you know, I think can benefit from getting that hope piece. You know, it's like, I've had some people come up to me and just like with these wild confessions, you know, like I'm addicted to chocolate, you know, and this, that, and the third. And like, I think there's, I've read once like where it's like from a Buddhist perspective, we're all addicted to something just to varying degrees. And especially now with cell phones and social media and stuff. To Chauncey's point, like, you know, it's, you can't like make everybody laugh. You can't please everybody. And, you know, it's, it's, it's nice when you can, like, there's no better audience than recovery people, you know, because we're people that like to have fun to a fault and you take away our favorite thing and we still want to have a good time. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, so, everybody's itching for your outlet. Please give this to me so I can do something else besides go, yeah, today was shit, man. You know, I'm suffering and shit. I admitted some stuff. I surrendered.
Right. And I think what inspired me too is that at mutual aid support group meetings. I'm a certified addiction recovery empowerment specialist. So I use a little of the vernacular, even though we're far from clinicians or whatever, you know what I'm saying. But like, we learn all the proper ways to say things.
I'm a person in long-term recovery. What that means is it's been 10 years since I've had any fun.
But I forgot what I was going to say. What was I talking about? Never mind.
So the there's like 3.4 million people go to treatment a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sellout crowd. That's an arena.
Yeah, like there's
so you're like, it's like, where can you go? Even if you're in those dim lit, you know, dingy comedy clubs, it's highly likely you're talking to someone who is on some spectrum of recovery, whether they're they're contemplating it, they have someone they love that's done it. But 3.4 Americans every year go to treatment. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. It's a big audience. And like they say, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts from, the music industry about touring and stuff like that and whatnot. And, they say in comedy, like, it can take like 10 years to find your voice and it can, like, you know, find your audience and stuff. And there's like a built-in audience right there. So, I think I was going to say is like, early, you know, at meetings, like something that really inspired me to be a comedian was just like how funny some people were and not even trying. So frustrating, but inspiring, you know. It's like, what are they doing? They're being honest.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, comedy has allowed me is to experience being honest.
Good comedy is honest.
Honesty, I think it really is received better now. It's like known by audiences now, that comedians do give you an honest outtake of things and they're able to make it funny. If you look at all the forms of information given to our culture today, the outlets that are like really received well are from comedians. If you look at Russell Brand, Joe Rogan, Jon Stewart, like these guys are all strong personalities. They're able to deal with controversy. They're able to make light of it, expose it, and like not like look like a professor or like I give you that, you know, anchorman voice as they're telling this important information. They're giving it to you like what we conceive as real and honest. Yeah. Like you believe that when a comedian delivers, and they're able to like really like, and I think it's part of a comedian's like personality is to really deal with controversy, to hold that stage down, right? Just, you know, and if you're bombing, so be it. I'm bombing, you know what I mean? If I'm going to deal with, you know, this heckler, I'm going to deal with it. You know, you're good on your toes. And, you know, it's just a great way for our culture today to receive like important information because of the honesty of comedians.
Right. And to that extent, real quick, like I've heard it said, you know, never forget your bottom, never forget your last run, da da da. And so it took me like 6 years to craft a chunk I just call Rock Bottom, but I string together this series of events of what the reality of it was. Cause I know as a, you know, we're imagine your audience is in recovery. So I'll call myself an addict without being stigmatizing. But, you know, as an addict, like, you know, we can romanticize, oh, it'll be different this time.
Yeah.
You know, the insanity piece. So like by me, you know, they say play the tape out to the end and they need to update that. Like, I don't know. Skip the track to the end. I don't know. Yeah. Tell your remote control to go to the end.
Pull it up on Spotify.
Right.
Stream. Skip hey, to the Siri. End of the playlist.
But so, yeah, I have that. So it was very vivid of what the reality was. And, you know, I'm able to find the humor in it, which is kind of that resilience piece, you know.
Yeah.
And that can take time. I think they say, like, you know, comedy is tragedy plus time.
Yeah.
So I heard, I was talking to somebody today and they said perhaps John Mulaney's piece was maybe not enough time between it. I really want to hear it. And he's brilliant. And he's already got this platform.
I get that.
So I want to watch it and see that.
But he's also too, how much time was it really? Because how news cycles come out and when did it actually.
Right.
I think it was like around COVID when, but there was something about his special that it lacked something.
Mm. Like hindsight, a little bit, like
yeah, it lacked a little heart. Mm. I think, but
that's
his style.
But he's that
kind
of comedian. Like, yeah, that's he's not a comedian that like gets like you don't gauge his emotions. He's a very straightforward, dry, and when he's giving you this information, it's not from a most like heartfelt delivery.
Yeah,
you would figure say, yeah, I was a fucking right. You know what I mean? Right.
Like, well, but I'd like if he didn't address it, people would be like,
oh, you're drunk and you're not telling anybody.
Right. It's like same thing with Louis. Like, you got to address it. Like, you can't. Oh, yeah. You right. can't not. You yeah. can't dance around it.
Yeah. I love this idea of taking somebody who is in recovery and has an idea to try a comedy and how invigorating that could be for somebody.
And I really, I feel like just kind of touching the iceberg. Maybe you can speak to that. And first, I do wanted to shout out John C. Like, he's hosted the Not a Glum Lot show at the old Freedom Club. And, you know, when I was out there working on doing my thing, people were like, oh, there's this other dude who's doing recovery comedy shows. And it was really cool to connect with him. And got to perform on his show. And so definitely shout awesome. Out to him. Yeah. And I don't know if you've had that experience with anybody, like maybe trying comedy for the first time, who's in the program.
I had a lot
or
of people just from hosting the shows, and they were pretty successful. And a lot of people reach out to me like, oh, you know, like, can I get in the show? And I'm like, hey, you come to this open mic with me. No one ever took me up on it, but I'm like, you can come to this open mic with me. Like, let's work through a few things and, you know, and we'll craft a set and I'll help you out. I can help you skip a few steps,
yeah.
which is like microphone placement,
yeah.
you know, where to put the mic stand, like all these things that like I
kinda where do you put the mic stand?
I put it behind me because I'm a stage walker. But, you know, I mean, some people stand at the mic. Like, some right, people right. sit on the stool. Some people do different things. You got to kind of find what's comfortable to you. But those were those things that, like, I had to learn on the fly.
Right.
You know, but I can help somebody maybe skip a few of those
yeah.
mistakes and get a little bit quicker.
I could see how people might not want to go to a bar who's in recovery to try stand up for the first time. That's right. something I'm passionate about.
I think that
towards.
Would be hilarious.
I've tried it. It's not. But I'd love to cultivate a space where we can, you know, have a safe space, so to speak.
Yeah.
A sober venue to host open mics and produce shows. That's the yeah. long vision of Stand Up for Recovery, is to have like a Sticks and Brick sober comedy club in Atlanta. And
Christian got about, you got a solid 10.
No.
You got a solid 10 minutes.
No.
I think it's
three. I have a solid three.
We were talking before the podcast. So he's like, how much you have? I said 15. I said, but for a long time, I thought I had 30.
Yeah.
Do you get up there?
Yeah. And I'm like, nah, half of this sucks.
Yeah. I've only done it for my kids. And I think I did for Kale and David. And, yeah,
we have a pretty full lineup of sober comics. If I can remember everybody, we got Nima Williams, who's been on pretty much everything from the Apollo to Showtime to, I want to say, Comic View to on down the line.
So cool.
Yeah. Walker Hayes. She's from Baltimore. She's from the DMV. Super funny. And I've got to work with her up in D.C. My friend Candace Saunders would... I helped her produce Sober Sundays in Washington, D.C. for a little while, and Walker was on that. And then Taylor Christian Neely, Taylor Neely's
going to... Love Taylor.
Yeah, shout out to Taylor. So he did
one of my shows. He's so funny.
Oh, man, yeah, he was great. I was at that show. He was hilarious. So, and he hosts Sober Boys podcast. We got Liz Durr. She's very funny. Williams Childress.
He's very funny.
Yeah, Dylan Toops.
So you got a lot of kind of accomplished comedians
yeah.
who've been around and
And we got a long list of, like, I got like a list of like 60 comics in recovery from all across the country.
That's cool.
Who I've been like trying to like keep in tune with. And the goal is we can move to a quarterly model, like every 3 months have a show, maybe at like a local RCO that has like a nice big space, like Grit and Grace or something.
Yeah, why not?
And
yeah.
then can be like, hey, there's this whole month. If you're going to be passing through to Nashville or Tampa, let us know. We'll build a show around you. And really just for our community, like, and, you know, they benefit from all these amazing comics and local comics can participate. And also, you know, I think our community will benefit. And I think the comedians who are performing in bars most of the time, like, will feel like a reprieve to be able to just... Mm-hmm. Let their hair down, you know.
Talk to their people.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely. Like, I've been trying to reach out to the Rat King, you know. I'd love to get Mulaney. I'd love to, you know, Mark Maron. Like, you know, the list goes on. Joe List and his wife in New York. They're about to have a kid, but would love for him to be a surprise guest at the show. I don't know. I know he's going to be kind of nearby, a couple weeks away. So I've been trying to, like, make some things happen. But just nurturing these relationships over the past 10 years.
Yeah, get Bobby Lee to get naked and be sober.
Bobby Lee, of course, would be such a
There's so
a
many
get.
Sober comedians, which is great.
It's a big thing, and, man.
I mean, because it's become, like, accepted.
Yeah.
And, like, an okay thing to do. Because, like, you know, 80s and 90s, like, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, you got, like, the Sam Kinisons of the world and those guys. You know, and there was a lot of guys, people that we lost. Brilliant people. Mm-hmm. That we lost
tragically,
right? And now it's like it's an okay thing to be healthy, fit, sober, take care of yourself, that sort of thing. And so, like, the longevity is good, and it's an accepted thing in our society now. That, you know, it's, I mean, it's still got some room, don't get me wrong. Like, yeah.
It does seem like the stigma has gone down in the past 10 years. Have you noticed that? Or it's I know, and my perspective is constantly changing too.
Yeah.
But maybe it was my own personal stigma and that I was reflecting. But it does seem like, you know, like that it's become more, it's become cool to not be like a total F up, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I definitely think the stigma's still there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much, you know, we feel it like in pop culture. I think it's, and maybe it take a time for it to trickle down, but I mean, you have like a lot of like shows out, a lot of movies out, mm-hmm. a lot of films that deal with addiction, deal with recovery. And so I think the more that art is kind of putting that out there, I think that kind of will trickle down to society.
So
but I still
normalizes
think,
it, takes some of the shame mm-hmm. away.
Yeah, but yeah. like we did a block party here for the neighborhood, and so we have our signs out, and we did free tacos. We had a big old bouncy house for the kids, and you know, a guy comes up and he's got his beer, but it's in one of them beer cozies, right? Which is annoying to begin with. Like, who does that? Anyway. And so
drink it faster.
Brown right. paper bag. Paper bag.
I know, right?
We get paper bags.
So you're supposed to use a coffee.
But he's like, hey, is it okay if I have my beer here? And I'm like, dude, we're not like anti like alcohol. Yeah. You know, like it's just I can't drink alcohol. Like right. if you can have that beer and then go home and not freaking call your dope man, then awesome, right? Because I can't. Like if I have a beer, I'm gonna want whiskey and then whiskey goes way too good with cocaine. So,
but that's your thing.
That's
you know
my.
What I'm saying? You.
Like, I don't right. understand the meaning of moderation. Community. I don't speak French.
Right. Exactly. So it was like that was a cool interaction. But I think like the more that we do things like that and are out there, you know,
for
to
sure.
your point, like when you're playing in those bars and you're talking about recovery, mm-hmm. it's kind of telling that story from a totally different angle.
And that's been a bit of an inspiration. Like last year, we were at the Punchline Comedy Club. You know, it's like a pillar of Atlanta. It's been around like for like 40 years practically. Mm-hmm. And this year being at the Atlanta Comedy Theater, which is like where Chris Rock and Chappelle comes.
Oh, I've seen him, Chappelle. I've seen Chappelle.
The new dude.
That was cool.
Who's blowing up right now. I mean, of course, he's been doing it for 10 years. Matt Rife, yeah. Like that was where he started comedy. So these are by, it's kind of like that recovering out loud piece, you know, and showing like, oh, we're functional members of society. You know, we vote, we pay taxes, we got cars, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, some of us can vote.
Yeah.
Some of us are working on it.
Some of us have cars. Others borrow cars.
But that being said, you know, that's kind of part of the, you know, just reducing stigma, which I heard someone share recently that stigma is just a euphemism for prejudice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think stigma comes into play when, people go, I don't know what to do with my son who's an addict. Yeah. I think that's a stigma.
It's an ignorance.
It's like, that's still your son.
Yeah.
He's just a complete jerk when he's doing his thing.
Like you said, it's ignorance. I think, like, I've heard it said that, like, racism is a mental illness. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, I guess it's...
It's rooted in fear, just like all our problems.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Come from fear, selfishness, dishonesty.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And I think that's where the stigma comes. And I think there are probably still a lot of employers who probably don't support that kind of stuff, you know, but for everyone that doesn't, I think there are a lot of employers who get it, you know, like a friend of mine has an organization and he's got 4 or 5 companies that are proudly hiring guys from that's sober awesome. Living.
Because I've heard about one of the stair place. You know about that place?
Their place?
They build like stairs and like cabinets. It's right near No Longer Bound.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, I know the place you're talking about. They also do tables and chairs. Okay, and stuff too.
Yeah. I just met someone who works there today.
Mm-hmm. Because what they found is someone who's serious about their recovery is actually...
Damn good worker.
Yes. If you put half your energy you went into chasing, you know, your proverbial dragon into anything else you pursue, you're unstoppable.
Well, I remember when my boss sent me to rehab, he said, if you're this good on cocaine, I can't wait till you get back, you know? And I was like, well, it didn't go the way you thought. But, because cocaine did actually make me, but anyway,
took a lot. It took a lot less breaks, though.
Yeah, it took a lot less.
For some reason, your bladder got a lot better.
It was the Adderall during the day and the cocaine at night that did me in. That was the psychosis and the. I could hear people going, "What's wrong with Christian in that studio?"
About the third day of no sleeping. Hey, he's crazy.
Or it was like, no more sleeping in your truck, dude. You know, because I would break away to go catch a nap. So let's talk a little bit. So you brought up some of these comedians, but then this event is part of the Mobilize Recovery Across Georgia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I'm not being facetious with this.
What the heck is it? No.
What the hell is it? And what good is it doing? I don't understand.
Okay. Well, let's see. It's to be determined because it's the first year.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say first annual if it's the first year, but they're hoping to do it again. So
it's a lot of people in Georgia, but it's been a nationwide thing
so
for a while.
Mobilize Recovery has been around since 2019. I went to the first one in Las Vegas. And then pandemic, everything went pretty much hybrid virtual for the past couple of years. And then last year they did a national bus tour, and made like 21 stops across the country. And this year it's going to be in Washington, D.C. It's pretty much, it's the same weekend as our show. I've been involved every year with that as a participant. And
driving a bus around the town?
Fair enough. So basically what it is, you know, it's kind of strength in numbers. So there's 48 stops. It's highlighting, there's proclamations at different stops, whether it's national, you know, recognizing, I think, like National Recovery Month or the 31st this month is National Overdose Awareness. So it's bringing politicians in.
It's a campaign.
It's a campaign. It's a grassroots campaign for recovery advocacy. Mm. They're distributing Narcan. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, things of that nature. They're just raising awareness. So like instead of one person doing one event, you've got 48 events who have press releases and coverage and stuff, and highlighting the fact that I think 800,000 Georgians are in recovery right now, and they're stopping at recovery community organizations. So it's shining a spotlight on them, and it's showing, I think the takeaway is to show the world, to show Georgia, sure, that recovery is real, that recovery is possible,
okay,
reducing stigma or prejudice, you know, and I think, you know, strength in numbers. Like, I've called a local politician about, you know, fill in the blank, and it's like, okay, yeah, all right, thanks. But if I call and I say, yeah, I'm calling, I'm a member of the Voices Project, our Mobilized Recovery, largest grassroots recovery advocacy movement in the country, then they listen up, they get their attention, and then, you know, so strength in numbers. So yeah, it is put on, sponsored in part by the DBHDD, the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities.
Okay.
I think, you know, these are bigger things that kind of the funding kind of trickles down. The Clinton Global Initiative is involved. They've been passionate about
making a move
the
right
opioid
now.
Epidemic. Yeah. They've been responsible for providing, oh God, I can't even know how many, like hundreds of thousands of like Narcan, you know, across the country. So, you know, it's traveling all around Georgia. So, and it's the biggest recovery happening in the Southeast. So it's, and they're hoping to just continue to do it. They're bringing a band. They're giving, you know, they're trying to mobilize people, like, for, you know, and they're distributing Narcan. There's going to be food, and it's letting kind of like the community know,
sure,
where they're at. Like, oh, there's this place. If someone needs help, there's this recovery community organization in our county.
Right.
There are resources. Yeah. So okay, it's and I think it's, you know, it's also a celebration.
Yeah.
And
so it's kind of like the same reason why we did the block party. We did the block party to let people know in the neighborhood, hey, if you or someone you love is struggling, you got a neighbor here who can help you.
You're not alone.
I can't fix you, but I can point you to some people that could get you the help that you need.
There's resources out there. And I think they're providing resources and tabling and at a lot of these events. And it's stuff, a lot of stuff for like family friendly stuff like that. I'm honored that, you know, I was asked to be
really
an official
cool
event for it.
Now, what's the date of your event?
It's September 17th, which is a Sunday, and it's from 5 to 7 p.m. There's free parking there. It is in Norcross. They do have two locations, but this is the location in Norcross. So you can actually put in Google Maps, stand up number 4 recovery, and it'll pop up there as well, which is cool.
And how much are tickets?
So tickets are between 15 and 25, but then, you know, like any tickets you get, there's going to be an exorbitant surcharge. And I wish there was something we could do about it. The best I could do was advocate for lowering the tickets as low as possible to make, you know, the least barrier to entry for people. So tickets are 15. It might come to like 24 something with the taxes and the surcharge.
Right. So it's like a,
it's like
cost
a normal
of a case of beer, you know what I mean?
But yeah,
it's
our
less
website
than Roxy for sure.
all of our information kind of funnels into standup4recovery.com. So standup4recovery.com, and we have a resource page. There's a little video on the front, our social media links, and would encourage anybody to please join our mailing list so we can stay in the loop about our next events and stuff. And, you know, would love to be able to offer more resources, like teach workshops and stuff like that. Have, you know, people like John C. and other comics, and just really kind of help.
So you drive this bus into Norcross, right? And then where do you post up at? Is there a venue that, a big venue that you're going to, outside?
So we're
going to
be
inside.
So most of the stops on the tour are outdoors. They got a stage. They got all this.
Yeah.
We're a small stop in that they don't have to unpack that. They're just going to come and relax. There's a documentary film crew that's going to be there that was with Mobilized Recovery last year. So they're going to get some little clips here and there. But they're just going to, they're going to pull up in front. People will see it. They can sign the bus. The whole bus is wrapped. You can put your sobriety date, your clean date, whatever. You know,
that's cool.
RIP to anybody.
Put one of your things up there.
Oh yeah. You got to come there and do a full piece. got 45 foot canvas, but yeah.
No, you won't make it.
Oh,
no more.
25 years, huh? Most time.
Six months? Yeah, we can cover that.
Just
so,
what today.
So yeah, you'll see the bus when you pull up. Doors open at like 4:30. Part of the proceeds are going to go to the Heroes Initiative, which stands for. Oh God, why'd I set myself up with that? Helping every responder offer effective services.
Ah. Damn, way to
go. So that is providing Narcan to first responders. A lot of first responders don't have it. Yeah. And so they distribute it anywhere around Georgia that's in need.
A lot of police officers don't have
some rural areas, yeah. But it does include parts of Atlanta as well. And so we're going to be shining a spotlight on them. Each show, we like to shine a spotlight on a recovery. You know, some people out there really doing the work, the hands and feet kind of stuff. And like, for this one, every September we'll have our big event. And then, like I said, hopefully we'll have smaller ones, but still try to highlight different recovery community organizations. Last year, we raised money for the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition. Shout out to them. They're doing some great work out there. Like really, like, you know, they're on the streets and like really meeting people where they're at. It's just like a blessing to be able to do that. And it's invigorating to feel like, you know, like I feel like I'm on my purpose, you know, I've like aligned, I don't really have a fallback plan from being on stage, but to be able to align that with my recovery for a person like me, I need to, you know,
plus you got some letters though. You got some credentials, right?
I got a little bit.
You got a little something going on. You know what I mean? Yeah, you got the what is it again?
I'm a certified peer recovery specialist and a certified addiction recovery empowerment specialist.
All right,
care worker and a CPS. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's two great credentials.
All right,
I'm cool. Just a certified junkie. So.
I'm a dope fiend, man. Dave the dope fiend, man.
Well, this has been great. This has been a great conversation.
And shout out to the Georgia Council for Recovery. They do amazing work. They got great resources. They've been a supporter of the show. And they're the ones who do the CARES training. So
yeah.
But they're a great resource broker.
All right.
Out there, yeah.
David, you got anything else you want to add?
No, man, I'm just, I appreciate you guys being, I am a true student of that craft. I love comedy. You know, nice. I'm such a laugher that it's like I use laughter as a defense mechanism. I use laughter, you know, when shit is funny, sarcastically. It's I've worked on it, being a defense mechanism of mine, because that's not really a healthy way. It's like a protector of mine. Like I could really be sarcastic just to blow off serious shit. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I love comedy. I love comedians and what you guys are doing, working alongside like the, what is it called? The Mobilizing, what is that?
Mobilize Recovery Across Mobilize Georgia. Recovery. You can check out MobilizeRecoveryAcrossGeorgia.com. There's a full event listing. There's definitely going to be something in your area.
It's so funny because I saw a dude, like I saw a friend of mine. He was like contemplating it. He's like, I think I'm going mobile, man. I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? I'm going mobile, my mobilized marker. That's when I first heard about it.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think Vickers was saying, I think about mobilizing my recovery, man. I was like, what is that? What does that mean?
Well, they say, like, wider the base, the higher the point of freedom. Yeah. We're throwing out a lot of stuff. People not recovering to be like, these dudes are on some.
So where are you going to be performing next? You, both of you, where can we see you?
Well, right now, I'm working on, I'm in a sketch comedy troupe, so we're in rehearsals right now, Dynamic El Dorado.
Awesome.
It's like Second City style sketch. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working on that. Mostly I've been just trying to like mobilize my own butt to let people know about this event. And that's been very, you know, fulfilling, but I'm also going to be needing to get up on stage as much as I can. This will probably come out before or after Saturday, but I'll be at the Atlanta Comedy Theater Underground on a midnight show with a group called Controlled Trauma Urban Improv.
Dude, I love that. And that name itself.
Sketch, stand-up, improv kind of mixed together. So I'll be there. And then in the future, we were asked by the ATL Comedy Awards if last year they did something highlighting mental health. And this year they're going to highlight comedy and recovery. And so there's going to be a podcast, Sober Boys, and also like a small show of Stand Up for Recovery. Stand Up for Recovery Mini Fest, I think we're going to call the other
Baby
ones.
Fest.
Because I say fest because it's a celebration, you know? Like, recovery is so much better when we're having fun.
Damn right.
So that'll be next. That'll be October, the middle of the month. But we'll have some links on Stand Up number 4 recovery.com.
The big date is September.
The big date is September 17th. Baby. Yeah. Tickets Sunday. Still available. A lot of people I know like to walk up day of, and that's cool. Would encourage people if they want to to go ahead and lock it in.
Right. Help a player with his budget. You know what I'm saying? Line items, you know
Sit
what I'm
down,
saying?
Fill up the
we don't
seats,
have any
boys,
sponsors.
Girls.
Or I'm the sponsor of this event, apparently. Right. If anybody wants to help sponsor, that would be cool. Yeah. But man, it's all love and, you know.
Let's try to make it out there, man.
Absolutely.
But hoping to have events like on all the big party holidays, like whether it's 420 or Cinco de Mayo or like Fourth of July, probably, because that's more family, but like St. Patrick's Day, maybe something kind of near Christmas
Tuesday.
And New Year's Tuesday, any day it ends with Y.
Did I see you at a Ricky Davis event? Have you ever worked with
Ricky Davis?
That's where
I met Christian.
That's where he got
Ricky
the
Davis.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he's rocking the shirt and he saw Jeff.
Yeah.
And then Jeff was like, I got to take the picture.
And then,
and then I was like, oh, because we talked when at that event.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'd love to have you come do the show.
Yeah.
And then
that
was
like,
just,
what, like
I
a
remember
year?
That now.
That was a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
So, man, much respect to what you're doing here, man. Y'all subscribe. Most High Media. Get that app.
You know,
Word. Netflix of Recovery.
Make it happen.
And, if you're on Instagram, at Stand Up Number 4 Recovery, and that's also on Facebook at Stand Up for Recovery, LinkedIn, I think, and if you're on YouTube, it's at Stand Up for Recovery Comedy. All those links are on StandUpNumber4Recovery.com.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. All right.
Thank you all so much.
You got a final word? You look like you want to say something.
Dude.
What are you talking about?
No, well, I really appreciate you guys having us here, man. This has been dope. I've learned a lot tonight, I have to say. I'm going to be on Richie's show on the 17th of September. And then I'm just kind of like around working on my craft, you know. I go up in mics or... You know, I occasionally get a show and stuff. I'm still out here grinding, so.
Yeah.
And he's a new father, too, so.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
He's holding down. He's getting a whole bunch of new material.
Bro, 15-month-old, and he is, he's great for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
how many months?
Say that.
15 months.
15. So when do you stop counting months?
Dude, I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. I think like 18.
18. Like the 18.
Same. Yeah, I ain't going to be like, I got a 36-month-old.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like 700 months old.
He's great, man. Yeah. He keeps me tired, though, I tell you what.
Yeah, but it's beautiful that you're... We just did an episode on fatherhood and mental health and
I was listening
balancing
to
that.
Right
yeah. There. And so it's cool that you're sober and having a kid and you're able to, what you said, like be present.
Right.
And really soak all that in, and it's beautiful. So thank you guys for listening to the Most High Show. Check us out at mosthighmedia.org, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.